Fancy meeting you
here.
Oh,
it's I really can't
nice
believe this.
Yeah, this is not the circumstances in which I expected to be talking to you.
Nor me, Rachel. It's always good to talk to you, but honestly, I didn't think that it would be under these circumstances. Yet another set of indictments.
This is something.
Indeed. So the ladies get to laugh about it. Rachel Maddow, Hillary Clinton, almost becoming a little like The View there just the other evening, of course, amid news last night that we got this indictment. Wow. Out of Fulton County, the fourth one, 13 counts for the now former president of the United States of America. And I'm telling you guys, this is not good. This is not good for the USA. This is not good for either party. All right, we are very seriously now teetering on being full-on banana republic. We should be singing Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, right? I almost burst into song on that one. Listen, this is, and by the way, no offense against Argentina. It really should be Venezuela, right? Because this is what it feels like right now when they can politicize things so much and go after you criminally because they don't like your side. That's what's happening. Major, major developments, and none of it good for the United States of America. None of it good for your average, everyday citizen. This is really bad. I'm worked up, obviously, you can tell. I'm back at home base. We're live here with the show. So good to see so many of you. Steven, Biking Cat, Captain Lurk, lots of familiar faces. Jake, good to see you again as well. Listen, we have got a problem of epic proportion. This country has been great for so long, but we, I believe, have just turned the corner into something that we should never be. We've got people that have lost their lives and risked their lives for the freedom that we enjoy in this country. And it's just evaporating right up in smoke. Welcome to this show. Good to be back at home base with all of you. Portions of the show are brought to you by LegacyPMInvestments.com. Give them a ring at 1-866-589-0560 to learn about investing in gold today or silver. This is something. All right, let's dig in. All right, let's get into what is going down here, because the Fulton County DA put in place, so to speak, or at least heavily contributed to through various sources by way of George Soros. She has come forward and charged Donald Trump and 18 of his allies with a whole bunch of stuff, primarily racketeering. And this is a big deal, and it's very broad, and went in place back in the 1970s in order to legally go after mobsters. The reason it's a problem is because it is so broad, and it gives her so much ability in some ways to just come up with stuff that really shouldn't be there. And when I say come up with stuff and really shouldn't be there, I mean, in other words, we really shouldn't be looking at any of this right now, because the way this is formulated, basically you can't ever contest an election. You can't say, hey, wait a second, like, I don't think that's right. I think I actually do have a shot in Georgia. You're not allowed to do that if this is going to hold. I mean, she's going after him for crazy stuff like retweets. He retweeted something from OANN, and suddenly that is now putting you in a criminal state. It's 98 pages. It goes on and on and on. A lot of it just really superfluous, as I said, with 91 charges total now for Donald Trump. That's four cases, everyone. 91 total charges all in when you count Fulton County, Georgia, in two different jurisdictions. You've got federal, you've got state, four different jurisdictions, forgive me, two federal, two state. This is like seriously out of control. Anyway, let me back up. Let's get into what this racketeering charge is. Again, 13 counts, 98 pages. And the biggie is this state RICO Act. So in Georgia, they have something, I mean, we have it pretty much in every state, and you have it federally as well. Interesting that, you know, Jack Smith isn't using this, but it's the Racketeering Influencing and Corruption Act. And the reason they put this in place was because they used to want to go after mobsters. Well, it was kind of hard to go after mobsters because, you know, you'd go after one guy and he's never going to rat out his boss. Like, he's totally afraid to. So they came up with this way, through this very broad legal statute, of going after sort of the middleman, right? Like somebody who's just kind of doing the paperwork, the white collar worker that happens to be working for the mob. They go after that person. And they say, hey, you are going to be hit with serious charges. Like, you're going to go to jail forever for murder because we can link you to your, well, maybe it might be somebody even lower down, right? Like the hitman on the job. We can link you to somebody who did commit a crime. And so you have to turn on this person. And so they would all turn eventually, and then they turn against the top boss, and eventually you could take the whole lot of them down. And so this was a way to basically get people to flip. And so it was very effective in doing what it needed to do. But again, very broad. I mean, it's exactly as a lawyer, I guess, what she should be doing. I'm going to give her a little bit of credit on that, because there's not so much credit to give. I mean, this woman, this is so honestly messed up that yesterday afternoon, I couldn't believe it. I was traveling home. I actually went live with a little video, not live. I taped a little video and I sent it out to you guys, because it was outrageous what actually happened. They filed the indictment with the court on the website before anybody in the grand jury had actually even signed off on it. So before the judge had squat, they had this document already posted on their website. You want to talk kangaroo court? What is going on? Well, this woman had literally no explanation for it. This is Fannie Willis, the DA in Fulton County, Georgia, who campaigned, mind you not, campaigned entirely on getting Trump. She's so delighted as like Rachel and Hillary, right? That she is now having her day out in the sun. Here's Fannie Willis. When they ask her about what exactly happened, how is it that you would ever have an indictment that actually became public beforehand? Watch.
I am not an expert on clerks' duties or even administrative duties. I wouldn't know how to work that system, and so I'm not going to speculate. Next question.
Oh, yeah. She's like, I'm out of here. Not speculating on any of this. Please, let's move on. Let's move on. I don't know how it gets. How do you not know how it gets done? I mean, like, you don't know how the sausage gets made at all? Don't you typically say, okay, the judge signed off, we've got our grand jury indictment, here it is, and hand it to the clerk? It sounds like, and I'm speculating here, it sounds like somebody handed it to the clerk ahead of time. And interestingly enough, it was like verbatim, exactly the same. So very, very, very strange, strange stuff. Look, but you know, we got a problem here, because this is real. This is actually really quite real. And a former president of the United States could go to jail. And as much as I think a lot of this is really trumped up, and we can get into that, the problem becomes that it's a state trial and it's in a particular county, in a particular area that does not like Donald Trump. So you're down there in Atlanta, 3 out of 4 people voted against Donald Trump. So they don't have a lot of affection for him. You have a DA that's run an entire campaign and campaigned off of the idea that she's going to go and get Trump. And now she finally has her shot. And then you got another problem, because if in fact she's successful, and by the way, be on the lookout this week, because they can't just wait to get as much mugshot. That's how twisted this is. I mean, twisted, that these people actually want to see the president with the mugshot and the whole thing. I'll tell you, if he does it, it's going to be actually probably good for his campaign, because it will infuriate so many Americans. You can just see him like smiling all happy in the mugshot. Please. So she's going to, you know, bring him in and charge him, and all kinds of fireworks probably happening later this week. Fannie Willis, this is her day in the sun. The reason why it's problematic, though, is, as I explained, I mean, you have a jury that is not exactly going to be sympathetic to him. And so if they're successful in any of these charges, again, the big one being that racketeering one, and guess what? He could go to jail for some 5 years. And how is he supposed to run the country if he's in jail? You might say, all right, well, he could pardon himself. Well, he can't pardon himself if he's in jail in Georgia, because it's state jurisdiction. So the feds don't have any say there. So as a federal employee, as president, he wouldn't be able to pardon himself. And then you say, okay, well, what about Brian Kemp? He's the governor down there. Well, it turns out the governor also doesn't have that jurisdiction. They'd have to come up with a special group, et cetera, to take a look at it. I mean, maybe it could happen. But none of this, as I said, is pretty. This is so extremely bad. So bad in every single way, shape, and form. And it just amazes me that people are willing to do this to our country. They are so willing to do this. You know, here's Hillary Clinton. Again, The MSNBC, you know, I told you the View is going to go away, right? Or at least everybody's salary is going to be reduced so significantly. I can't imagine Whoopi Goldberg's going to want to wake up and do that show every single day once Bob Iger and ABC sell it off. Disney's looking to divest some of its businesses, right? Like ABC News, which owns The View. Anyway, you know, Rachel can take over that spot. Maybe Hillary can be her co-host. Here's the two of them talking about how it's so important to have truth. I have something to say about this. Because this happens to be Rachel Maddow, who fed us a whole bunch of conspiracy theories, and Hillary Clinton, whose team was coming up with those conspiracy theories. Watch.
The system of democracy at its heart is the idea that the people get to decide how we are governed. And if we no longer believe that our will is effectuated through the system, if bad actors tell us falsely that every election is stolen and that the only way an election is trustworthy is if they come out on top of it, then something, it tells you something not just about that person or that moment. It maybe wounds us as a democracy in a way that is hard to repair. Mm-hmm. What do you think about how we get better after the wounds that have been inflicted on us through this process?
Well, I think, you know, the truth matters. I think having these cases be brought and be brought in such professional manners, we'll see how they unfold. Obviously, the trials, if there are trials, are going to be critically important.
Yeah. You see, such a professional manner, right? Right. When they release the indictment ahead of time. That's what you call totally professional. And she's just salivating at the idea of waiting for that trial. I mean, maybe it's payback, right? Because her husband had to go through that whole televised trial and she was just mortified, as she should be. Like, wow. Anyway, I point to that because she's talking about the importance of truth. We know all the conspiracy theories that Rachel Maddow fed us. I remember watching that at the time and being like, how can anybody like buy any of this? This is wild stuff. And she just would keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper down that rabbit hole, which was entirely fictitious. And anybody with half a brain ought to have been able to look at some of those things, like the so-called dossier, which was written as though it were for the National Enquirer, and have concluded, as a journalist, logically, this was not a piece of intel. It was not written by anybody in the intelligence field. It was written as though it was opposition research. So that was Hillary's opposition research, which sent us down that whole thing. And yet, Hillary Clinton, 2 months before the election, less than that, this was in like late August of 2020. I couldn't believe my ears when I heard this one. She went on some podcast with her former PR person, and here was her advice, listen to this, for Joe Biden going into the election. This is before a single ballot has been cast, everyone, right? The election didn't happen until November. This particular segment, this is what aired in August, and this is what Hillary Clinton had to say to Jennifer Palmieri. Listen.
You know, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances because I think this is going to drag out, and eventually I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch.
Excuse me? You do believe he will eventually win if you don't give an inch? You see what they were plotting all along. So wait a second. Let me be very clear. If your side is winning, then it's okay. It's fine. You can ask all the questions you want. But if the other side is winning, then somehow they should go to jail. They should get a mugshot. They should get indicted multiple times. And they should get stuck in prison because they dared to question the election. I dared to retweet something that was questioning the election. I mean, they dared to meet with the Speaker of the House in Pennsylvania. I have a question here. Like, can we not, as individuals, ask questions? I mean, sometimes it's not so easy to get answers. And if something looks as though it was close, could you not, if you believed maybe that you were the rightful winner in Georgia or Pennsylvania, could you not actually ask those questions? And what about your legal advice, right? Because they went after all the lawyers there. Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, who was actually chief of staff at the time, Jenna Ellis. They went after all the lawyers. So does it mean that you can't actually consult your lawyers and get legal advice? And if they give you bad legal advice, are you now suddenly going to wind up in jail because you dared to contest this thing that was not allowed? It was too sacred to be contested. I remember Stacey Abrams. Anyone remember Ms. Stacey Abrams from Georgia, who refused to concede the election when she ran for governor there against Brian Kemp? I haven't forgotten that. You see what I'm showing you on the screen right now? A New York Times Magazine piece. This would be from April 28th, 2019, titled, Why Stacey Abrams is Still Saying She Won. So I went back and I read the piece again, and it was nauseating, like just absolutely nauseating. This was one big giant glorification of Stacey Abrams, and the reporters like, gosh, you know, how important is it for you to be thought of in presidential terms? I mean, it was just gross. It was actually a conversation between this reporter and Stacey Abrams, and you could sort of see it on full display. So it was just like, oh my gosh. And of course, the headline, which actually is an interesting headline, they don't even get there. Like, the reporter is clearly terrified to ask Stacey Abrams about what the heck's going on in terms of her insisting, right, that she's winning the election, because, you know, that doesn't exactly set what you might call a good precedent, shall we say? Well, this was all before 2020, of course. This was back in 18 and then into 2019. Well, Stacey Abrams finally, after the reporter asked her, I kid you not, about her dating life. I'm like, all right, good thing I read this and not you, right? It was a lot to take. Anyway, after we get through the dating life and how hard it is to date when you're in politics, blah, 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 we finally get to this little section where the reporter ever so gingerly asks, oh, I saw that recently you said something like you'd won your election, but you just didn't get to have the job. Really? I mean, that's how you go in, right? And she says, yes. And then the reporter says, quote, is there any fear on your part that using that kind of language fans the same flames that President Trump has fanned about delegitimizing our election? And she goes on to say, oh, no. Quote, I see those as very different. Trump is alleging voter fraud, which suggests that people were trying to vote more than once. Trump offers no empirical evidence to meet his claims. I make my claims based on empirical evidence, on a demonstrated pattern of behavior that began with the fact that the person I was dealing with, was running the election. If you look at my immediate reaction after the election, I refused to concede. Indeed, she refused to concede. So I'm sorry, she's able to get this empirical data, but Trump doesn't have any right to ask for the empirical data in Georgia. Like, just doing so somehow violates a whole bunch of you know what. Anyway, there was a little footnote after, quote, I refuse to concede, a little teeny footnote. You see that on the screen? You see the teeny little six and the underlining of I refuse to concede? This is how the New York Times Magazine handles it. And if you click on that footnote, you see this little tiny line that says, after her attempts to force a runoff fell short, Abrams ended her campaign for governor with a speech in which she said, quote, so let's be clear, it's not a speech of concession, because concession means to acknowledge an act is right, true, or proper. Democracy failed Georgians. So again, it's just fine for Stacey Abrams to say it. And it's absolutely fine for Hillary Clinton to insist they got to cling, they got to hold on for dear life. Just not okay if Donald Trump dares to do it. I'm going to repeat this little quote from Clinton.
You know, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances, because I think this is going to drag out, and eventually I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch.
Yeah. So that's where we are, America. How do you like that? You want to talk about a divided country. You want to talk about a banana republic. You want to talk about kangaroo courts. You want to talk about a system that is just stacked against one side and has been really from the beginning. Do not forget all this election, not legitimate president stuff, all that stuff started with the left. Remember Jimmy Carter when he said this?
There's no doubt that the Russians did interfere in the election. And I think the interference, although not yet quantified, if fully investigated, would show that Trump didn't actually win the election in 2016. He lost the election, and he was put into office because the Russians interfered on his behalf.
Oops, we got to play a little more of that because it gets even better, guys. It gets even better. I'm going to go back
to
it and see if I can
manage this. I think the interference, although not yet quantified.
Here we go. It gets even better. It gets better. Wait for it.
Russians interfere.
John McCatchum says, wait, what?
Did you believe President Trump is an illegitimate president?
Based on what I just said, which I can't retract.
And they all laugh. Ha ha ha. Isn't that funny? I mean, that's like a huge accusation. A former president of the United States then saying another president is not legitimate and using the reason that, oh, that the Russians interfered in the election and they stole it for Trump. And the reason they wanted him was, oh, because there was this dossier. The whole thing was fake. It was all made up by Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know, this is like the little boy that cried wolf. I mean, they keep trying to get us to believe their side and they keep getting proven wrong. Think about the 51X spies that came out and said, oh, nothing to see here with Hunter Biden's laptop. Turns out, what do you know? Where there's smoke, there's fire. And indeed, he was being investigated by the FBI. We're going to have more on that in a second. But let's talk again just for a moment about what this means, like how bad this is, right, for our country, for who we are. We are no better than a banana republic. We should not be going down this path. And it's important that everyone speak up, including all those Never Trumpers and the Republicans. I was pleased at least to see Chris Christie do the right thing by coming out and saying, yeah, this is going one step too far, guys. One step too far. One took over the line. Is that the expression?
This is why I'm uncomfortable with what I read last night. I think that this conduct is essentially covered by the federal indictment, not with the level of detail that they cover it in this, but that's just a stylistic thing. Election interference is election interference. It's been charged by Jack Smith. And most of the time, what you'd see here would be a state court deferring to a federal prosecution, especially if that federal indictment had already been issued. Mm-hmm. So I think this was unnecessary as to Donald Trump. Now, remember, as to the other defendants, Jack Smith chose not to charge them. So I would have less of a problem with this if she decided, okay, I'm not going to charge Donald Trump here because he's been charged for essentially this conduct by Jack Smith.
No, but she can't do that, you see, because she's going to go after him because her entire political future is based on this. That's why she ran, right? That's why you got all this coming at him from every single direction. Think about what this means. I want you to think about that. I want you to remember what Donald Trump said about Hillary Clinton back in the 2016 debate. Remember when he said, oh, you really don't want me to win? I know why you don't want me to win, because you'd be in big trouble, right? If I wanted to follow through on some of that stuff, here's a little clip for you from 2016, the debate in which he told her she'd be in jail.
You know, it is, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
We want to remind the audience to please not talk out loud. Please do not applaud. You're just wasting time.
It's like, yeah, because you'd be going to jail, lady. You know what? He never pursued any of that. And I think that's an important note. Because you know what? I'm telling you, like, the GOP just has so much more class and so much more respect for the constitutional republic that we are. And yeah, he could have probably gone down that path. And I remember at one point talking to him about it. He could have gone down that path. And you know what? He chose not to, because it wasn't the right thing for the country, right? We don't want to be Venezuela. We don't want to be Brazil. Where, by the way, the guy that went to jail, Lula, he's now back in as president. I mean, this is wild. Wild. Like, shouldn't we hold ourselves to a different standard and think of the precedent that this is going to set going forward? You do realize that now your political enemies can go after you for anything. Racketeering, you're going to see, mark my words, you're going to see DAs all over the country suddenly start going after all of these politicians on a federal level for racketeering because it's so broad. And if you get one person in the organization to flip, then you can go after the big honcho. So one would have to expect. I mean, listen, they're the ones that opened Pandora's box first by saying that the election was not legit because the Russians controlled it all because they had the goods on Trump. They said he was not a legitimate president. We had to listen to that for 4 solid years. And then they admitted that they were going to, you heard Hillary Clinton, they were going to make sure that they held on and they were going to make sure that they won. And now the guy that did hold on is now in trouble for doing so. Now, look, I mean, you know, I'm realistic and I'm honest with you. And there's a lot of things that Donald Trump did that, you know, maybe he shouldn't have because he might have saved himself from a few things here and there. All that said, this is going to be, or should be, a tough case to prove because we do have freedom of speech. I mean, you're trying to say that he conspired. He conspired with all of these people to commit a crime, that he wanted to go and commit this crime, that he knew he absolutely, positively had not won the election. And yet he did this anyway. Well, can you really prove that? Because he may say, I think I did. I think that the system's, you know, corrupt and that's the problem here. So if he's maintaining that, that's why that little book thing is going to be an issue. Maybe he'll say he was speaking, you know, in some other way, shape or form. I don't know, but they have him apparently on record saying that he didn't think he'd won the election. Well, if he believes he won in Georgia, then doesn't he have the right, especially if his legal counsel is saying, okay, you can look at this, you can look at that. It just seems like that's a pretty huge leap. Nonetheless, it's a leap that this DA is going to make and one that the jury could very well go along with. I mentioned how it's going to politicize everything now. And we're now in a very, very heated moment, like just a ticking time bomb here, because think about what's being alleged about Hunter Biden in relation to his dad. And $11 million that NBC News reported was given to him and his family's companies, Biden companies. They had 20 LLCs that went into action as soon as Joe became VP. $11 million that were coming in from foreign sources, primarily they said Ukraine, and boy, did he spend that money fast. Well, now I think, just guessing, I mean, hey, if all's fair in love and war, you're going to see a lot of DAs that are conservatives, they're going to go after the Biden family. And I would only say, not to ever say that anything that Hunter Biden is alleged to have done, and I believe it's a lot that he probably did do, and I think that there, you know, had to be some connection between dad knowing things and Hunter doing things, not to say that it's right that we go after on a state-by-state basis, right? It's one thing to have a special counsel, which we don't even have justice there. More on that in a moment. It's one thing to have a special counsel and to be looking at this from a federal sort of perspective and have the special counsel bringing charges in Delaware, whatever. It's another thing now if all of a sudden you're going to open this up to every single conservative version of Fannie, her name Willis, Fannie, all the other Fannies out there, right? They're suddenly going to be queuing up in line to go after Hunter and Joe Biden with the racketeering clause. This is what the Democrats have done to this great country. This is the total politicization of everything. Meanwhile, you want to think the country's getting run? Do you see Joe on vacation again being asked just a simple comment? I played this for you yesterday at the top of the show before all the indictment news broke. This was Joe when he was asked about Maui while he was on vacation. Listen in.
President, any comments on the rising death toll in Maui?
Will you come talk about the Hawaii response, Mr. President?
Nothing there.
Yeah, nothing. Zip, zero, nada. He didn't have a thing to say. He didn't respond. He just kind of smiled and waved. And so I have to say, like, is it because no one in the PR department, Karine Jean-Pierre, like she didn't get a chance to like okay his words? Is it that he's not allowed to talk? Is it he just doesn't care? Or, and this is the funny joke everybody's making, right? Have you seen the memes? It may be because, guess what? Hunter didn't get his payout yet. Where is that money after all, right? Listen, Hawaii's in bad shape. We can have a conversation another day about that. I think you got to have some controlled burns in these forests, and there's going to be more accountability on these states and federal entities to make sure that they manage these forests. We have similar problems happening up in Canada and California, all these liberal places, by the way. They go on and on about the environment, but they're not doing anything to take care of their environment. Anyway, Hawaii does need help, and it would make sense that the president might have a kind word or two to say about it. I think he's finally said something. I hope he said something. I saw Kamala Harris said something today. But right now, he just wants to talk about, well, what he's going to try and campaign on, which is not going to be very successful because people see through it. Here he is at a manufacturing plant today. Watch.
In case you haven't noticed, inflation's down too and it's going lower. Remember.
Okay, so don't give me that line. Don't give me that line because, you know, I actually know a thing or two about this. My entire career has been spent in the financial news space. And I can tell you, inflation is not going down. In fact, the latest read shows us that inflation just went up 0.2%, which is really kind of scary given that the Federal Reserve has been doing everything it can recently in terms of raising rates to try and control this inflation. But as I said, from summer of 2020 on, you couldn't keep printing checks. You couldn't keep handing out money and expect to have inflation come in under control. And what did Joe Biden do? He's, oh, big old Inflation Reduction Act, which just poured more money into the economy. He got multiple rounds of inflation. He handed out a third stimulus check, for goodness sakes. And he thinks this is going to result in a better economic picture. I'm sorry. I mean, have you seen menu prices when you go out to dinner these days? I can't believe it. I mean, you can't get hotel rooms. You can't get airfares anywhere. It is out of control. And that number, as I said, up 0.2%. He's like, oh, it's coming down. It's coming down. Like, it's come down a little bit in some respects, but only from where it was when he first got there. You see, when he came in the door, it started climbing naturally, because the economy was closed and, you know, it's closed. People have pent up demand. And Joe just kept handing out the dollars like, you know, there was no tomorrow. So that affected things. And consequently, if you look at the real numbers, and we look at it sort of every month, right? The real numbers, when you compare and contrast, show that inflation is still upwards of 16% from when Joe Biden walked in the door. So I'm sorry. No, inflation, it may have come down a few times here and there, but you're the one, buddy, who sent it through the roof. You're the one who caused it. So when you try and brag about it coming down, and again, it went up 0.2%, we're not buying it. We're just not buying it. I mean, nobody's running the country. And yet we're printing money. We're spending money. I mean, have you seen the numbers out of Ukraine and what we're spending there? I'm going to get to that. Plus, I got to show you the Ukrainian like version of Karine Jean-Pierre. Which just happens to be an American who's also transgender. I mean, you can't make it up. Anyway, we're going to get to the Ukraine money in just a second. But first, this, just a reminder that portions of the program are brought to you by LegacyPMInvestments.com. If you're worried about inflation, if you're worried about the long-term economic fundamentals of the country like I am, I encourage you to look at diversification strategies. One of those strategies you could look at is investing in gold. Some people like silver as well, a little bit easier nut to crack. Anyway, silver and gold. If you're interested in any of this, I do highly recommend you call my friends, and they are good friends. They've been a sponsor from the very beginning at LegacyPMInvestments.com, 1-866-589-0560. Their website is LegacyPMInvestments.com. You are welcome to use my name, of course. As I said, they are friends. Charles, the CEO, is going to be on the show later this week, so we'll talk a little more economic stuff with him. But again, we're spending money like nobody's business. And that catches up with you. It catches up with you. I was looking, the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, put out a look at where we're spending there in Ukraine and how much we've spent. The total as of a couple weeks ago was actually $75 billion. I mean, this is a lot of money. $75 billion. I'm really stunned by this. I'm just looking at the graphic that I was wondering, of that $75 billion, where is it going? Well, humanitarian aid, 5%, 3.9%. Financial aid, which is budget aid through economic support funds, loans, other financial support, that has been $26.4 billion. Then you have the total military, which is somewhere around $46.6 billion. That's 61% of the budget. And then you have security assistance, which is training, equipment, weapons, logistics supports, and other assistance provided through the Ukrainian Security Assistance Initiative, $18.3 billion. Weapons and equipment, $23.5 billion. That's 31% of the budget. And that's weapons and equipment from Defense Department stocks provided through presidential drawdowns. So we're spending a lot of money, like a lot of money. And Ukraine is not exactly known for being fully entirely on the up and up, regardless of what you think about Putin, the war, et cetera. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about numbers here. And I'm talking about taxpayer dollars, your taxpayer dollars going to this effort when we know that Ukraine has a checkered history, shall we say, of, well, just being a little on the corrupt side. Here's a few headlines for you. Ukraine deputy minister sacked because he was siphoned off $400,000. He had intelligence suggesting pro-Ukrainian group sabotaged the pipelines. Remember that? Okay, so like we know that we're dealing with a corrupt state, and yet we're just continuing to give them all this money, which brings you back to, this is awkward. It brings you back to, and it's awkward because I had a professor on the show the other day from Northeastern University, Max Abrams, saying it's really strange because we're spending all this money, like more than we've ever spent in Europe, like since World War II. And the guy who's controlling all that spending happens to be the same guy whose son got those giant payouts, right, from Ukraine. And happens to be the same guy whose son is charged with foreign, possibly hasn't been charged yet. I should be very careful. I mean, that's part of the issue, right? They never charged him with the illegal foreign lobbying. There was that plea agreement, right, that they tried to shove through. And fortunately, the judge had enough common sense to say, this doesn't make any sense. But, you know, you got to at least say this doesn't feel right. I mean, foreign lobbying, illegal foreign lobbying is a serious charge. They brought those charges against Tom Barrack. Remember Tom Barrack, a billionaire guy out. I've interviewed him many, many times, very successful entrepreneur, tremendously successful entrepreneur in the U.S. And he backed Trump. And of course, they go after people and they got him on some foreign lobbying. I don't remember the specifics of it, but they said it was illegal. He didn't need it. Like that guy did not need the money. Trust me, he's a billionaire. Hunter, on the other hand, Hunter gets a plea agreement for a couple of tax evasion charges and nobody's going after sort of the big kahuna, if you would. That's alarming. Not to mention that this is not something that we didn't know about. Treasury Department knew. The Treasury Department finally came forward and gave over the documentation showing that banks, a lot of banks like JP Morgan, Bank of America, there were six major U.S. banks that all filed suspicious activity reports, 170 in total, because of the money that Hunter Biden was getting in from these foreign sources, and they couldn't really make heads or tails of it. Here's Representative James Comer, who has been leading the investigation. Here he is on Ted Cruz's show talking about 170 SARs, 170 suspicious activity reports. Here's why this is kind of weird. He lays it out really well. I want you to listen.
Who, over the course of 10 years?
And how many were issued concerning Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and the Biden family?
Over 170. They were direct.
But you were at a bank and they issued two in 10
how many years?
If you had two SARs, they're called SARs in the banking industry. If you had two SARs against you, it would be hard for you to open an account somewhere. There wouldn't be any bank that would want to have you as a customer because it's not worth the paperwork. Remember, when the bank files one of these, you could understand this, appreciate this, Senator. That's inviting the regulators to come in and regulate. Okay, that's the last thing the bank.
So 170 get filed. That means that somebody's getting a deposit in their account. It's a big amount. It's from somewhere suspicious. I mean, what triggers it? Why? You're a banker. What is it that makes you say we got to file a SAR?
A large transaction that comes out of the blue.
So and what's large? So, what is there a threshold?
You had a million. I'll use the Robinson Walker account because that was the first bank account we subpoenaed.
Now, who's Robinson Walker?
Rob Walker was one of the associates that they used to funnel money from China and then in Romania and then down and launder it down to the Biden.
So he's a
Okay. So Robinson Walker, that was one of those LLCs, like of the 20 LLCs that were all in that report. House Oversight Committee published it, and they got all these records from Treasury showing that all these suspicious, well, you could see actually the amounts of dollars. I mean, it was pretty amazing. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but I shared with you them the other day, and you're looking at like 25,000, a million, 100,000. I mean, big, big numbers that are getting transferred in. And so apparently as they're transferred in, the bank is like, wait a second. You know, they have all these rules, know thy customer. You've probably gotten calls from your bank. Like they want to check things out. I've gotten calls from my bank. They want to check things out. It's never escalated to the point where it's going to Treasury, right? Of course, I don't have like foreign money coming in there or like money that's going to some offshore, you know, Cayman Islands account somewhere. This was sophisticated financial engineering to a certain extent, although not sophisticated enough. It certainly was triggering a lot of suspicious activity reports. So important to understand within the context of everything. And all I'm saying is, look, they want to put Donald Trump away in jail in Georgia. Well, I'm sorry, guys, but it's whether you like it or not. And I feel terrible for the country that this is happening, but this means it's game on. And this means that you're going to have district attorneys all over the country that are doing the bidding of the GOP now going after Hunter and Joe Biden with these racketeering statutes that are very broad and you can get a lot of information. And so if Devin Archer is saying, yeah, you know, it was all about access and we did this, that, and the other, or Tony Blinsky, remember that guy? Then you're going to have some stuff to talk about. I mean, think about this, the smoking gun text from Hunter Biden. Let me share it with you. Here we go. This is when he was apparently in his father's house for a long weekend, sitting here with my father, and we would like to understand why the commitment made has not been fulfilled. Tell the director that I would like to resolve this now before it gets out of hand, and now means tonight. And Z, if I get a call or text from anyone involved in this other than you, Zhang, or the chairman, I will make certain that between the man sitting in the room next to me and every person he knows and my ability to forever hold a grudge, that you will regret not following my direction. And yeah, that's like really kind of bad stuff and kind of sounds like, well, I don't know, racketeering? I mean, like I'm making the jokes about the mob boss, but it kind of sounds very mafia-esque. Biden, for his part, Joe, will not say whether or not he would pardon his son in the case of something serious like that. Watch.
So thank you both. And as my mother would say, God love you. Thanks. See you all.
We got to ask some serious questions here. We got to ask a lot of questions. I feel very bad. I mean this from the bottom of my heart that we are in the situation that we're in right now. I think that we should be better than this. We should not be weaponizing the law to use against political opponents. You are risking now this looking increasingly like election interference, because what they have succeeded in doing now is making sure that all of these trials will be going on during the election itself so that Donald Trump cannot campaign. Now, they could have brought these charges earlier. They chose not to. Could that be because they know that in a contest with Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, there's a very real chance that Donald Trump wins that? In other words, they don't have a good enough politician, so now they're succumbing to this? This is alarming. And I didn't even get into all the election electors, right, where they're saying that they were not allowed to be electors, and so that was artificial and, in fact, criminal. Again, I just question if you're getting legal advice that's perhaps bad in any way, is that the problem? Because these people signed on saying, okay, I can be an elector, because oftentimes, it actually started back in 1960, I think it was a Nixon, it may have been Nixon Kennedy, they started it back in 1960 so that they'd have an alternate group of electors in case, and I think the Democrats are the ones that started it, in case a state looked like it was going to flip. So now suddenly that's illegal? I mean, think of the implications of this. They're pretty darn significant. I'm disgusted, frankly, by just all of it. And we got to keep talking about this. Anyway, I did promise you, I promised I would show the footage of the Ukrainian PR person. So, you know, we have like our person, Jean-Pierre, Karine Jean-Pierre, here in the U.S. who keeps telling us, oh, you know, there's nothing with Hunter Biden and Joe, nothing at all. That's just a personal thing. You know who she is. I'm just going to show you.
I wanted to ask about the president's reaction to the legal developments yesterday and with the initial plea deal for his son appearing to fall apart.
So, look, I'm really not going to say anything more than what I shared yesterday. This is a personal matter for Hunter Biden. This is...
If you look
personal
at
matter,
mouth,
personal matter. Anyway, here
you'll
is
notice that
Ukraine's
blood drips from
Ooh.
It. He's a vampire carrying out genocide against both Ukrainians and Russians alike. Vlad Putin bathes in the blood of innocent children and enjoys it. And this is why the dictator of the Russian Federation must be deposed and why peace talks have to be focused on President Zelensky's 10-point peace formula and the full liberation of Ukraine.
Whoa. Like, can we even say something that there was like blood and vampire references? And like, I'm sorry. You know, we try and keep it clean here. That was a little over the top. And, you know, again, I'm not voicing an opinion on, I talk about the finances here of this war and just the sort of interesting observation that the Ukraine's Karine Jean-Pierre is a transgender, I guess originally born male, and American. So, hey, you know, there you go. There you go. Anyway, just something that maybe we can kind of just take note of. I think the bottom line, however, though, any way you slice it right now, is we are in a really treacherous time. The country that we know, the country we love, the country that so many have died to protect, it is... at risk. It's in jeopardy right now. Our freedoms have been squandered. There are teams of people that believe in a very different kind of law, that don't have the same kind of faith in individuals and faith in God and the belief that our individual rights are God-given. And so they have migrated to this legal system that can, and this is my warning, can just as easily be used against them. And believe me, it will be. It will be. Mark my, this is the beginning of the end. This wonderful country that we have loved and enjoyed and has been such a tremendous success on the international stage. These days, I hate to say it. I really do. I hate to say it. I think they are just over. I don't know what replaces us, by the way, because you go around the world and no place, dare I say, is still as unique and as good as America. But we have squandered that and we're willing to allow people like Hillary Clinton, people like Joe Biden, to erase all the goodness, all the wonderful things that we have been able to accomplish. This is a kangaroo court, and whether you like Donald Trump or you hate him, you ought to be able to stand up for what's right. And this is not right, America. Please make sure, if you haven't, do subscribe to the show. We got to keep this conversation going. It's important, more so than ever, that we have this direct line of communication. You can also sign up for my email at trish.regan@trishreganshow.com. Do me that favor. Make sure you sign up, and we'll continue this conversation. Of course, it's critical.